Okay, here we go. Last year, I gave a shiur about the Rav Zatzal, Rav Yosef Dov Salvechik, the Rav, and Baruch Hashem was well received. So I thought maybe this year I would give a similar style shiur about his younger brother, Rav Aaron Salvechik Zatzal. And that's the shiur, Lessons and Inspiration from the Life and Teachings of Rav Aaron Salvechik. Recently, one of Rav Aaron's grandsons, Rav Shmuel Marcus Shlita, gave a beautiful speech about his grandfather, and it's on YU Torah, and he told a lot of wonderful, beautiful stories, and I'd encourage you to hear that shiur as well. You know, he's in the family, he has a lot more beautiful stories from the family itself. Okay, so let's begin. I'll start with a brief outline going through his life, and then discuss various ideas that I know about, that I heard from him. And at the end, Bez Hashem, we'll play a tape from Rav Salvechik. Last year, during the shiur, I played a short clip from a shiur Rav Salvechik himself once gave, describing himself giving shiur as an old man. That was also well received, Baruch Hashem. And this year we have a printout of what the Rav said, so it's easier to follow when you're following along in the words. And I want to play that again this year because I think it blends in well to what I want to say about Rav Aaron. Okay. Rav Aaron was born in 1917. He was around 15 years younger than his older brother, the Rav. So Rav Aaron had an interesting life where he grew up, his father was one of the Gdolei Ador, and his older brother was one of the Gdolei Ador. And that's like a unique experience, and he would speak about that often, what it was like. You know, you're 8 years old, your older brother is 23. By the time the Rav was 23, he was holding Kol Torah Kula. So Rav Aaron Salvechik grew up with his older brother, you know, instead of like, you know, playing ball with you, you know, he's holding in Kol Torah Kula. And just one example he mentioned about it, and it was when we heard him describe it, it was so beautiful. He said that, you know, at the Seder, there's a halacha, that right before the Manishtana, you're supposed to do things to get the kids excited, to ask questions. That's when we do karpas, and that's you pour the second cup of wine, and that's when we do yachatz. And there's a custom to give out candies. There's a halacha. It says to give out candies at the Seder. So some people give out the candies right then before the Manishtana. So one of the dinim is you're supposed to remove the Seder plate and take it off the table. If not off the table, at least you're supposed to move it to the side of the table. Not everyone does it nowadays, because nowadays the Sfarim say you just cover the matzahs instead. Okay, but it's better to take it off the table. That's what it says, or to the end of the table. Rav Aaron said in his home, the custom was as follows. He says, during the year, he says, my father was a gadol, and my older brother, they would talk during the Shabbos, the Yom Tov Shabbos meals about Torah, the Iyun, and I was young, I was 5, 6, I wasn't holding yet to be able to discuss these things with them. And I wasn't part of that part of the conversation. And the meal didn't revolve around me. My father's custom on Pesach was, they took the Seder plate from in front of my father, they didn't take it off the table, they put it in front of me. And he said, I felt like a hero. That was his language. And a hero, that the Seder plate's in front of me, and the whole Seder revolved around him, and he was describing vividly how the night of Pesach, that's when he really, so I didn't see that brought down in the Sfarim to actually put the Seder plate in front of the youngest child, but that's what Rav Moshe Salvechik did. And Rav Aaron said, like, that was the night where he felt he was the most special, he was the youngest child. Okay. He came to the States in the 1930s as a teenager. He was obviously very learned, very smart, and he was in his father's shir. His father, Moshe Salvechik, was giving the shir in YU then, in the 1930s, and Rav Aaron, as a teenage boy, was in his father's shir. In the 1940s, he became a Rebbe in Tiferes Yerushalayim, Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva, and there's a beautiful smicha which he received from Rav Moshe when he was in his early 20s. Rav Moshe wrote, my distinguished friend, the Rav Gaon, great light, great in Torah, and fear of heaven, who comes from a chain of illustrious lineage, I know him and recognize him to be a great Talmud Chacham, who has the ability to correctly derive and decide practical halacha. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, describing Rav Aaron Salvechik when he was in his early 20s, and he was a Rebbe in Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva for several years. 1947, at the age of 30, He became a Rebbe in Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, in Brooklyn, and he was there for 13 years. In 1960, so his older brother, the Rav, wasn't well, and he wasn't able to give shiur, so they asked Rav Aaron to come to YU in 1960 to give shiur like in his brother's place. And he came to YU in 1960, and he stayed for 6 years, even after the Rav came back. Rav Aaron, so for 6 years, the Rav and Rav Aaron were both giving shiur in YU. In 1966, he was offered a position in Chicago, and he went to the head of the yeshiva in Chicago. It said, I think Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, gave him the advice to take the position. And then he spent the next roughly 20 years as a Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. In 1985, when the Rav already had stopped giving shiur, his older brother, so YU asked him to come back and give shiur again. And then for the next roughly 15 years, until he was nifter, Rav Aaron would commute from Chicago to New York. He'd give shiur in YU, I think Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think. And he'd give shiur in Chicago Thursday and Sunday. I think those are the days. Rav Aaron had a serious stroke in 1983. And he lost, we'll discuss this more later, and he lost the use of most of the left side of his body. So the Mesiris Nefesh to go on the plane back and forth every week for 15 years was tremendous. And he did it, and we'll discuss that more later. A big part of Rav Aaron's greatness was to teach Torah and spread Torah despite physical adversity. So that was the outline of his life, and he was nifter in 2001. All right. When I think of Aaron Soloveitchik, the first thing I think of is the Masorah. For me, he was a link in the Masorah. Sometimes you hear a shiur from someone, and it's a nice shiur, and it's inspiring. Sometimes you hear a shiur, and you feel, wow, this is special. I feel I'm in the Masorah now. And when I hear Aaron give shiur, I was never in his regular Gemara shiur. When I was in YU, I heard him give Hashgacha Parsha classes for a year and a half. And hearing him give shiur, we'll discuss this more at the end, I felt I was part of the Masorah, and he would talk about things and talk about things he heard from his father. Rav Aaron had a passion for detail. He liked to mention the details of things. That was his thing. Once he said, he mentioned a pshat in the Gemara, and he said, I heard this pshat from my father 55 years ago. And my father told me that he heard this pshat from his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, 55 years before that. That means this pshat is 110 years old. Now, to hear that in the shiur, that a Rav is saying, there's a chiddush in the Gemara that was first said 110 years ago, and now you're hearing it, it's very exciting. That's the Masorah, to feel you're part of the Masorah. We'll discuss that more at the end, but that's what I think of when I think of Rav Aaron. Obviously, he was a tremendous tzaddik, and there are many, many stories of his tzidkus. And again, you should listen to Shmuel Marcus's shiur that he gave, that is on YU Torah, where he described things about Rav Aaron. There's one or two stories. This I heard from Rav Aaron myself. Rav Aaron was describing, he said, that my father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal, so he was not harsh with me as a father. He was gentle. He said, my father never hit me. He said, one time my father had to threaten to hit me. So Rav Aaron then described the one time that his father had to threaten to hit him. What was it? He said, I was 6 years old and it was Yom Kippur. And I wanted to fast on Yom Kippur, so I didn't eat at night. And now it's the morning, and my father said, you can't fast, you're too young to fast the whole day. So my father gave me food the morning of Yom Kippur to eat. I was 6 years old. But I didn't want to eat in Yom Kippur, so I didn't eat the food. I put it aside. And I came to Shul, and I was fasting. So towards the end of Musaf, I imagined my older brother, the Rav, who was 21, 22, that, you know, I'm still fasting. So about now, the Rav was a young gadol. So al pi halacha, it's dangerous for a six-year-old to fast, especially the briskers are very, very, very careful when it comes to fasting. That's one of the things they're known for, that they're very, very makil on not fasting. And the briskers say they're very, very machmer on the kiruach nefesh. It just depends, you know, how you say it. That's what one of the things they're known for. So Rav Aaron said, my brother told on me. And he went to my father and said, you know, Aaron is still fasting. So my father said, you have to eat. He took me home and he made me eat. I said, Tata, I don't want to eat. He says, you must, I don't want to eat. And he was chasing me around the table. And my father said to me, my father said to me, I'm going to hit you if you don't eat. So then he ate something. So you talk about a young tzaddik gadol in training. The one time his father had to threaten to hit him is when he was 6 years old. He had already fasted two-thirds of Yom Kippur. He wanted to fast the whole day, and his father didn't want to let him. That's when his father had to threaten to hit him to make him eat for the last third of Yom Kippur. That's Avraham Soloveitchik as a six-year-old, and you get a sense of the type of home he was in and the type of person he was. When he told that story, he was smiling. We'll discuss this later. He was always smiling. And we'll discuss that later, despite the adversity in his life. When he was a Rebbe, I think in Chaim Berlin, it would happen often that he would miss his subway stop on the subway because he was engrossed in his learning. He started learning on the subway and he'd miss his spot. And then when the subway line ended at the last stop, he'd get off and he'd have to somehow get back to where he was going. That was well known. That was like something, you get engrossed in his learning and he would miss his stop. All right. There are many more stories. That's just a few. Okay, certain ideas and certain aspects of his life that ideas that he focused on. Number one, Orthodox versus conservative. See, nowadays, Baruch Hashem, in our generation, in our the last 10, 20, 30 years, so Baruch Hashem, Orthodoxy is quite strong. And in most communities, it's not as if there's a fight of Orthodoxy versus conservative. The sheker of conservative, Baruch Hashem, people are aware of now and more, and you see what happens in the conservative movement. And now, Baruch Hashem, that's not the main struggle. But in the 50s and 60s, that was a major struggle. And in community after community, there was a struggle for the heart of the community, Orthodox versus conservative. And Rav Aaron was one of the strongest, strident fighters for Orthodoxy against the sheker of the conservative and reform movement. And one of the reasons why we in our generation are zocha to have this relative success is because of his leadership and his fighting. When he had an opinion, he was very strong in his opinions, and he was vocal. I'm going to get to this in a few minutes as well. Very vocal in his opinions, and he would say it, and he would say it loud, and say it often. And in the 50s and 60s, he was one of the leading fighters against the conservative movement, and a lot of our success nowadays is due to his approach. All right. Number five, the quote-unquote peace process. He was very, very, very against the peace process. I was here when the very beginning, I forget the exact, the very beginning, when I forget the details, when it started, I think around Oslo, I'm not sure, the very beginning, when it was beginning, he was talking, it's terrible, and you're giving guns to terrorists, and it's going to lead to more and more deaths, and it turned out, unfortunately, he was correct. And he told us as follows. He was ready then, often when he would travel, he was wheelchair bound by then. And he told us, and this is known, he flew to Israel to speak to, back then, Prime Minister Rabin. And he told us what happened. He said he went to see the Prime Minister, and there's a term when you're wheelchair bound, so in Hebrew the term is shatuk. So the Prime Minister said, you're shatuk. You travel all the way to Israel to talk to me. He said, I might be shatuk, but I'm not shotek. That's the way he would talk. I'm not shotek. And Rav Aaron told us, this is what he said to Prime Minister Rabin. He said, you're not a religious man. And, you don't do so many mitzvos. How are you going to get to Olam Haba? So we said, the Gemara Chazal tell us that a person can be kona Olam Haba b'shar achas in 1 hour with one action. My Rebbe Rav Einemar Shlita from Silver Spring always has a play on words. He has a lot of play on words. That Shah Achas, he always said, that's Daf Yomi. An hour a day Daf Yomi, you get Olam Haba. That's a very, very, very nice. Anyway, that's not for now. Anyway, that's not what it means literally, Shah Achas. But it means one great action, you can get Olam Haba. So Rav Aaron said, he said to Prime Minister Rabin, when you led the battle during the Six-Day War to reconquer Yerushalayim, I think that was your Shah Achas. That'll get you into Olam Haba. However, he said, the process you're starting now, where you're heading in the direction of giving back everything we gained, and giving back Yerushalayim, just like you can get Olam Haba in one Sha'achas, you can lose it as well. And I think you're on the way to losing the Olam Haba which you gained. That's Rav Aaron's style, very direct, and that's what he said to the Prime Minister of Israel. That's what he told us. He said, Anishtatukva, Anirosh Otek. Okay. Number six. Rav Aaron would often talk about, and this is in one of the source sheets, that he often would say that the rise of Medinas Yisrael, in his opinion, was one of the greatest Kiddush Hashems of our century, because it showed the Jew was not forsaken. His older brother, the Rav Zatzal, said similar things, that after the Holocaust, people said, you know, oh, the Jewish people, it looks like, you know, like, where is Hashem? Where is Hashem helping the Jewish people? And the rise of the Medina showed the Jew was not forsaken, and he felt that that's a Kiddush Hashem, that the fact that this unlikely event happened of a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael after so many years, he said this often, this idea of the Jew is not forsaken, it's here. I'm not sure I put it in the source sheets. That's something that he would speak about. Okay. One aspect of his life that stood out was the small things. He was very, very careful in treating people with Derech Eretz, and not just the big things, but the small things. I'll just give you a few examples. One, it says here, turning a chair. So when I heard him give shiur, he was giving hashkafa classes, parsha hashkafa classes in YU. So it was a mixed crowd with a mechitza. And this was after his stroke. His stroke was in 1983. This was already in the early 90s. And it was early 90s because I was married already. We used to go together. Okay, that's I remember, because the late 80s I wasn't married. The early 90s I wasn't married. So anyway, so it was the early 90s. And so after his stroke, it was hard for him to sit normally because his left arm would shake. So the way he would normally sit was to get into his chair and sit like facing that way, away from the crowd in a sense, like his body facing this way with his arm on the table so it wouldn't shake. And he'd look like this to sort of look at when he was giving shiur. That's how Rav Aaron would give shiur normally. All right. Now, we'll get to this again later. It was very hard for him to walk, very hard for him to move. And let's say the room he gave the shiur in was this size. It was a little bigger. So to walk from the door where he sat to give shiur, I'd say it was a little bigger than this, would take him 5 minutes. Now that's an eternity. Take us, you know, 10 seconds. And it was hard to walk, and he was tired and crexing. So the first time, so I was sitting in the front row, the first time he gave shiur, he sits down, he got into his chair facing this way with his arm on the table. Then he mumbled something to himself, and we heard he mumbled to himself that he felt it wasn't, so the men were here, and the women were over there. So he was facing basically with his back to the women. And he mumbled to himself that he felt it wasn't appropriate to give a shiur literally putting his back to the women, even though that's the way he always sat, like facing. So therefore, he sort of got up, and it took him a long time to adjust his chair to go a little bit this way, so he wasn't directly his back to the woman giving a shiur. And it struck me, and this is 20 years ago, it struck me so much, and it was hard to do. And that was the first thing he thought, I was about to give the shiur. I can't face this way if my back is to the women over there behind the mechitza, on that side of the mechitza. Another example, the idea of having Derech Eretz for everyone, for Jews, for Goyim, something he was known for. There's a beautiful story here. After he was Nifter, Hamodia published a beautiful article about him, and this will lead into the next section as well. During the last days of his life, when he was in the hospital on Sukkot, and a non-Jewish girl was making the rounds, giving out mugs. This you don't have. This I found later. I found this article after I prepared the shiur. Actually, Rav Palk gave it to me. So Rav Aaron's a Palk's Rebbe. Okay. He did not miss an opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem. Even in his frail state, he strengthened himself and told her how beautiful the mugs were. He then asked her her name and told her how much he appreciated her bringing the mug to him. After she left, Rav Aaron turned to a family member and said, "It is the little things that make a Kiddush Hashem." That story captures Rav Aaron exactly. A little girl, non-Jewish girl, is giving mugs out in the hospital. He's very sick. This is his last illness. He goes out of there to make Kiddush Hashem. That's Rav Aaron's style. Oh, this leads into number eight, Ava Sabrios. Rav Aaron was he would talk about this a lot, the idea, the obligation to treat everyone, to treat Goyim with respect. To treat Goyim with respect. You can find it, if you have it in the source sheet, on page 2, source number 2 on page 1. And he would often quote from Reb Chaim Vital. Rav Chaim Vital, this is in the Shar HaKadusha. Not everyone has it. I'll read it to you. It's a short quote. He says as follows: "Know that love of mankind applies." This is from Rav Chaim Vital. "Love of mankind applies even to non-Jews, for it is incumbent upon one to love all of mankind, created in the image," meaning capital I of Hashem, "as it is said, Chaviv ha'adam shenivra b'tzelem. Beloved is man who was created in the image of God," meaning that it's all Jews, all people, not just Jews. So there's a concept of beloved is man who's created in the image of Hashem, of brotherly love towards all mankind. This was Ravon, he was talking about this a lot. I just tell you two stories about this. One I call Good Friday. This I heard when I was Menachem Ovel, after Ravon died. One of his family members told the following story. Ravon was in the hospital, and it was the springtime, this time of year. So one of the non-Jewish nurses went to him and said, "Oh, you know, Rabbi Soloveitchik, your Passover's coming. Have a wonderful, happy Passover." He said, "Thank you very much." Then she said, "Rabbi Soloveitchik, you know, now wish me a happy Easter." So he was uncomfortable wishing her a happy, I don't know what you say. I guess whatever you say. He was uncomfortable, and he thought for a second. Not Easter. Okay, I just destroyed that story. Pretend I didn't destroy the story. We'll start again. So she said, "Now wish me a Good Friday." I think Good Friday is part of this. Wish me a Good Friday. So he was uncomfortable. They don't want to wish her a Good Friday. That's part of her non-Jewish thing. So he said to her, he thought for a second, "You should have a very good Sunday, and a very good Monday, and a very good Tuesday, a very good Wednesday, a very good Thursday, a very good Friday, and a very good Saturday. You should have a very good, wonderful week." And she was so happy when he said that, with a big smile. And his son said he was proud of the fact that he thought of a way where he wasn't in any way doing something to be religious. He wished her a good week, and he said he dafka didn't start from Friday. In other words, he wanted to make Friday one day of the week. And that's exactly the kind of thing he would do. He made her feel good. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, have a wonderful week. That was Avraham. Okay. There is a fabulous series of books called Touched by a Story. Wonderful, the Touched by a Story. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe? I don't know. A lot. Now there's Touched by a Seder. So there's a story in Touched by a Story number 1 about Rav Aaron. And it's an incredible story. Some of you have it in front of you. If you have it, it's the source sheet that says page 1 on it. If not, I'll read it to you, and it's worth it to have the book just for this story. And the story is about, it says here, a person named Mark Stein, who was an Orthodox Jew who went to a football game in Chicago, in Soldier Field. That's where the Chicago Bears play football. For this game, Mark had good seats in an area that was shielded from the wind. Okay. Oh. Mark introduced himself to Jerry, to the fellow next to him. And his seatmate introduced himself as Jerry. Small talk revealed that they both were successful businessmen involved in supplying nursing homes. Mark comforted himself, even though the game was not exciting, perhaps he would make a new business contact. They swapped business cards. Then Jerry glanced at Mark's business card, and he asked, "Are you Jewish?" Mark answered that he was. "Why? Do you know any Jews in the Chicago area?" Mark asked. "Only one, and it's not me. It's my wife." This is what Jerry, the non-Jew, was saying. "His name is Rabbi Soloveitchik. Do you know him?" The look on Mark's face changed from one of pleasantness to sadness. "Well, of course I know him. He was one of the greatest rabbis in the Chicago area. But I'm sorry to inform you that Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away last week." "What? I don't believe it." A look of sadness and shock appeared on Jerry's face. Jerry immediately took out his cell phone and to call his wife. "Lisa, it's me," Jerry said slowly. "Sit down. I have some terrible news to share with you." These are non-Jews. "Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away last week." Jerry looked up at his new acquaintance and motioned that his wife was crying. All right, I'll call you back soon just to make sure that you're okay." Jerry turned to Mark and began to explain. "She has been a stewardess for the past few years on American Airlines. Every week Rabbi Soloveitchik would fly from Chicago to New York, as I mentioned before. He told my wife that he went there to teach ever since his brother passed away. He sat in first class. Most of the passengers in first class pretty much ignored the flight crew, but the rabbi took a genuine interest in the welfare of my wife and the rest of the crew. He knew their families, all the important things that were happening in their lives. Some wife feels like she's lost someone special in her life. He's a stewardess. Mark was humbled. Here he was sitting in Soldier Field next to a Gentile whose wife, a stewardess, was extremely saddened over the loss of Ari Soloveitchik. The Rav could have kept to himself on the flights. Everyone else did. But instead, he had decided to make a difference to make Kiddush Hashem. Mark came to a football game to get away and enjoy himself for the afternoon. Little did he know that he would learn a lesson about how a person should conduct himself at each and every moment of his life. An amazing story. That's Avraham Soloveitchik. If you ever met him, you're too young to have met him. I don't know if you met him, there's some of you. But the way he would carry himself, you could picture him, like, how are you, the way he would talk, and be so pleasant with people, and always with a smile, and with non-Jews as well, a very big yesod. Okay, number nine. Rav Aaron, for many years, gave shiur in YU, and he would often discuss Torah and secular studies, and he's written articles about it as well. And one of his favorite stories was as follows, and this captured the gist of his approach to Torah and secular studies. He would often tell a story about Rabbi Sol Salanter, Zatzal. Rabbi Sol Salanter once visited Germany. In Germany, in the Rav Hirshian world, so of course in the Hirshian world, Rav Hirsch pushed secular studies as well. He opened schools like that. And in the German world, there were many students. They learned Torah and learned a lot of secular studies as well. So the story goes that Rabbi Sol Salanter met a father, and the father was boasting about his son. He goes, my son, he knows a lot of math. Rabbi Sol Salanter didn't react. He knows a lot of science. He didn't react. He knows a lot of history. He didn't react very much. Okay. Then it was time for Maariv and the Daven Maariv. After Maariv, Rabbi Sol Salanter came over to the father and he said, you know, I want to tell you as follows. When you tell me your son knows a lot of math, that's a zero. Science, another zero. History, that's a zero. Then I saw your son Daven. I saw the way he said Shema. I saw the way he said Shemona Esrei. When I saw his Yiras Shemayim, that's a one. Put that one at the beginning of the zeros, and now they're worth something, 1,000, 1,000,000. That's Rabbi Sol Salanter's story, and that Rav Aaron would say it all the time. If you start with Yiras Shemayim and a proper approach to Avodas Hashem, then there's a lot you can gain, a lot you can use. You can use science, you can use math for a lot of wonderful things, but it has to start from the one, and he would always talk about this. It starts from the Torah and Yiras Shemayim first. When you talk about the Torah and secular studies, you have to emphasize, put that big one in the beginning. Then everything else, the zeros, become meaningful. But by themselves, without Torah and Yiras Shemayim, they're a zero. With Torah at the beginning, then they can become useful, and we can add it. That story would, again, he said more than that. But that story, I heard him say that story myself. I think it's in his books. That captures his approach to Torah and secular studies. Number 10. Rav Aaron was very approachable. When you're a big gadol, some gadolim, just there's a certain aura about them. You're afraid to. He's very approachable. You could go up and I would go up and talk to him in the base medrash. Very approachable. And through that, Rav Aaron himself was personally involved in giving lots of chizuk and lots of kiruv to people. And he was like a one-man kiruv person. And there are stories about this. And this is also written up in the article, which I found after I prepared this year. And a fabulous story. This outlook made him a powerful force in Jewish outreach. Countless secular Jews who met him were profoundly influenced by him and his worldview, and eventually undertook mitzvah observance. In the summer of 1975, Rav Aaron visited NCSY's Camp West in Big Bear, California. He spoke for hours to the teenagers, several of whom related their personal problems with practicing Yiddishkeit in homes that were not fully observant. After the last teenager left the room, Rav Aaron began to cry. When asked what was wrong, he responded, "Their courage, their strength, I don't know if I could be as brave as they are." These boys eventually became frum Jews, and one of them is a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael today. Rav Aaron's own grandson was a student of his during the past year. And this came across. You could talk hashkafa, and you could talk to him one-on-one. And again, and his grandson spoke about this as well from Chicago. He was personally involved in kiruv. When if you just met him, you were captured. It was just an unbelievable thing. Number 11. Rav Aaron was a walking Musar Sefer. I met him after his stroke, and the Mesiris Nefesh he had. the Besiris Nefesh he had, just to walk, he would try to do things by himself, to watch him put his tefillin on every day, and to watch him go through, and when you think about it, here he is giving, teaching Torah, giving shiur here in New York, giving shiur in Chicago, back flying back and forth with the Mesiris Nefesh. And I heard a story from someone who said as follows, when he was younger, so he heard as follows. Rav Aaron's youngest son was in the car, they were driving somewhere, and the younger son said to his father, "Tati, I have to throw up." So Rav Aaron turned to him and said, you can do it. Motivate yourself from within. You don't have to throw up. Right? So that's what Rav Aaron said to his son. Okay. And he was a little kid. So one of the students was in the car at the time. This story made the rounds. And his Talmidim got a good laugh that that's the way a father talks to a son. Motivate yourself from within, my son, and you don't have to throw up. Okay. So this person told me, 30 years later, after Rav Aaron had a stroke, and you saw what he did, and you saw the way he taught himself to walk again, and the way he fought through and was giving shiur in two states for 15 years, and the way he was always positive and always upbeat despite the tremendous difficulty, Rav Aaron motivated himself from within. If that's who you are, and you're genuine, that's the way you talk to your son. If it's genuine, then you can talk that way. For most of us, it wouldn't be that's who he was. Motivate yourself, but that's the way he spoke, that's who he was. And this person said, I saw 20 years later that we shouldn't have laughed at that story. If that's the person you are to your children, so that's how you can talk to your children. They obviously live with their father. They saw it day in, day out. That's how you go through life. After a stroke, he had to teach himself to walk again. And as he was walking, one step at a time, so the nurses and his family members would hear him mumbling to himself. And as he was walking, they would hear him mumbling, "Achas, achas v'achas, achas u'shtayim, achas v'shalosh." That's the language the Kohen Gadol used when he sprinkled the dam in the Beis Hamikdash during the Avodas Yom Kippur. And Rav Aaron was, so there are a lot of pshatim, there are a lot of levels of this story. The simplest level is, you're a brisker, you're a lamdin, your whole life is Torah, so when you want to count something, count one step at a time, so you count in a Torah way based on the Mishnah and the Torah of Achas V'Achas. There might be a deeper pshat as well, which is, that it's not just that's how you count, but that's the rhythm of your life. When you're so involved in Torah, so when some people, when they're a person needs therapy, so there's a music therapy, some people, they respond to music. They hear music, a certain beat, so the music gets them, can get them focused on things. So for Rav Aaron, Torah was his music. And when he had to focus himself and focus his thoughts and focus his energies, so the way to focus himself was to take a halacha and take a din from a Mishnah and start counting achas, achas, v'achas. That story shakes me up. But that's how Rav Aaron taught himself to walk, by using the language of the Kohen Gadol, sprinkling the Dam on Yom Kippur. Okay. Oh, whoops. Number 12. And of all the ideas here, this is the most important one. Number 12 is Simcha in adversity. It's number 11. It's number 11 again. I put 11 twice by mistake. Sorry. Okay. It's the second 11. Okay. Rav Aaron had a stroke in 1983. And the next 18 years, so many examples of, you saw how he, like we discussed, lived through the adversity and found simcha within the adversity itself. And he would say Divrei Torah, which I'll mention some. And it was the most powerful thing. He was talking about himself. And he didn't say this, but we were saying, oh my gosh, this is talking about himself. So just a few things. First of all, number one, about the neshama. There's an article, it's in one of the books, you can find it, one of the books that was published, that Rav Aaron published. Right after his stroke, he published an article in a Torah journal describing the following idea. Rav Aaron felt that after his stroke, he had experienced proof of the existence of a neshama. He said, until my stroke, I believed I had a neshama. My father told me, Chazal say, I have a masorah. But after the stroke, I felt I have empirical evidence that I in the existence of a neshama. He said, the stroke on Sunday evening wrought a spiritual metamorphosis in my whole Weltanschauung, my outlook on life and the world. Prior to the stroke on Sunday evening, May 29, 1983, my belief in the extraneous existence of the soul was grounded exclusively in Amunah. Now my belief in the extraneous character of the soul and immortality of the soul is grounded in a physical perception through the biological senses. And he described as follows. I think you have to be more of a doctor to understand this. Here's what he described. When we lift our arms, so we don't feel like we're lifting our arm. Just we pick our arm up, it goes up and down. If you lift a box, so you feel like I'm lifting a box. This box is not me. I'm lifting something that's outside of me. But when you lift your arm, you don't feel like you're lifting something outside of you. You're lifting you. Your arm is you. Rav Aaron said after a stroke, when he lifted his left arm, he felt like he was lifting a box. In other words, he sees his arms connected to his body, and he lifts up his left arm, but it felt to him like he's lifting something outside of himself. And the doctors wrote in a footnote to the article, that's exactly how you feel. Like the doctors who know how... Okay. So I said, what's the pshat? Doesn't make sense. This is my arm. And before the stroke, when I went like this, I felt I was lifting me. That was just part of me. And now I'm lifting a box that's outside of me, but it's connected to me. So he said he's convinced the pshat is that the reason why when you pick your arms up and down, it's you, it's not something outside, that's because you're neshama. Your neshama is what unites every part of your body. And therefore, when you lift up your arm, it's all you. The right arm, the left arm, it's all the same you. He said the stroke, to a certain degree, loosened the connection of the neshama to the goof. There's something off here now. Things aren't connected exactly properly. And because of that loosening of the connection, his left arm now, although it's connected to his body, it feels like it's outside of himself. And therefore, this is what he wrote. This is a gadol. He just had a stroke. It's literally 3 days after his stroke. And he's writing that after the stroke, he has stronger emunah. This is what he found from the stroke. Stronger emunah and stronger belief in the neshama, something outside of the physical body. That's what he described. Number four at the bottom there. Right, left, chesed, and din. This is unbelievable. The halacha is that we emphasize the right over the left. When you wash your hands in the morning, let's say for neglevaser or for washing for bread, you wash your right hand first, then your left hand. The Shulchan Aruch says you should fill up the cup with your right hand first. Always emphasize the right over the left. So fill up the cup with your right hand, then switch the cup to your left hand, then pour in your right hand first. You emphasize the right over the left. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes one shot, because the right side of Hashem is chesed, and the left side of Hashem is din. Like Mismali Gavriel. Gavriel is Gvura, din. So you want to emphasize the right over the left. The right side is... So therefore, we do things in our lives to emphasize the right over the left. That's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes. So what's the pshat? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that he understood that yesod, it's a Kabbalistic idea, that idea he understood better after his stroke. Why? He said he went to write at Dvar Torah after his stroke, and he couldn't write. Because he never appreciated that he's a righty. When you write with your right hand, we use our left hand for balance. We use our left hand to hold the page. So although if you're a righty, your right hand is your strong hand, we use our weaker hand to help our strong hand do its thing. Just we don't think about it because we're focused on the right hand. He said as follows. Hashem's right side is chesed. Hashem's main midah, his stronger midah, in a sense, is chesed. The Ramchal says, Hashem is tov, wants to be meitiv. Hashem wants to just give, and shower bounty, shower shefa on the world. That's what Hashem wants to do. That's the right hand of Hashem. The strong hand is chesed, giving us more and more. But sometimes, we don't deserve it. We're not deserving of Hashem's bounty. We've done aveiros. So Hashem will use his left hand sometimes to send punishment, to send din. The purpose of the punishment is to help us come to more tshuva and help us be more deserving of the shefa of the right hand. So the pshat that Hashem's right hand is chesed and left side is din is that the left side is helping the main strong right side do what it wants to do. Hashem wants to give more and more shefa, more and more tov, like the Ramchal says. But we don't deserve it. So sometimes Hashem has to punish us with the left hand, the gvura, the weaker hand. The whole purpose, the function of the weaker left hand is to help the right hand accomplish more and more. Rav Aaron said that he understood that after his stroke. When he couldn't write normally, that's what he thought of. That's a gadol. You're facing adversity, you're facing a challenge, and you use it to find an insight, a beautiful, deep insight into Avodas Hashem. Oh. And this leads into number two over there as follows. When you get married, so at the Sheva Brachas, at the Zimun, it's a different Zimun, and they say the language of She'asimcha bim'ono, that the Simcha is the bim'ono. When you talk about Hashem, you don't say the regular language, you say She'asimcha bim'ono, the Simcha is in his place, ma'ono. Why? So Rav Aaron asked, why the phrase ma'ono, ma'on? Ma'on means makom, Hashem's place. Why not say Simcha bim'komo? So he quoted as follows. The Gemara says in Chagiga and Daf Yud Beis, there are seven levels of the Shemayim, seven levels of heaven. Each one has a different name, and each one has a different function. The Gemara says that the sixth level of Shemayim is called Ma'on, Mem Ayin Vav Nun, and at that level of Shemayim, the Malachim sing Shira Balayla. The angels sing Shira at night. It's nighttime, they sing Shira. What's the pshat? So Aaron explained, nighttime is a time of darkness, a time of tsaras, a time of difficulty. So in that level of Shemayim, the Malachim sing Shira at night. Even at night, evil in life is more difficult and it's much more of a challenge, but you can find the strength to sing Shira, and Rav Aaron is saying this, we almost started crying. This is Rav Aaron's life. To sing Shira and be besimcha, because you have the right emunah in Hashem, even balayla, that's what ma'on means. So why at a wedding? Rav Aaron said, because marriages have ups and downs. Marriages have ups and downs. Sometimes things are very good and everyone's successful. Sometimes things aren't so successful. And even when life is not so successful, to still find the strength to have the simcha, to sing Shira together with your spouse, that's something, that's a bracha we want to give to every chassan and kala. And he said, that's one shot in Ezer Kenegdo. A lot of, what's called Ezer Kenegdo? There are many pshatim Ezer. Ezer means a helper. Kenegdo means opposite. So like, how do you fit those two together? Rav Aaron said he thinks one shot is Ezer Kenegdo means you're an Ezer even when life is Kenegdo. When your husband is successful, he gave an example of politics. His example was running for the Senate. Your husband runs for the Senate and he wins. He's a senator. He's supportive. But what if he loses? So instead of your husband being a winning senator, he's a unemployed old, that's your husband. Can you be supportive of your husband? Can you have Shira even then? That's Ezer Kenegdo. That's what he said. A wonderful wife's job is to be supportive even when things are difficult. And that's Shira Balayla. And that's why we use that phrase, Simcha Bim'ono, at the language of the Zimun. We're giving a bracha to the Chassan and Kala that life has ups and downs. And even when things are more challenging, you still find the ability to be besimcha together. She'asimcha bimona. That's Rav Aaron. Again, when you heard him giving these divrei Torah, and you saw the life that he was leading himself, and the way he lived this, and he found the simcha always with a smile, always besimcha, trying to do things whatever he could himself, giving others chizuk when he was facing the mesiras nefesh back and forth, Chicago to New York, was just absolutely incredible. Okay. On the second side of the page, I've there are a lot of divrei Torah here. Each one is 45 minutes. Each one's a long shir. Harosh mentioned some of them. I mentioned one isn't here. It's from the Haggadah. It's one of my favorites. So Pesach time, so I'll mention that as well. So if you want to call it, I guess, pre-12, it goes as follows. In the Haggadah, we say as follows. We say, Yochom Erosh Chodesh. I might think the right time to say the Haggadah of Sip, where it says, I'm as Rosh Chodesh Nisan. No, the Pasuk says, Talmud Rav Bavur Zeh. Only when the matzah is in front of you. In other words, there's a Havamina in the Haggadah that the right time to tell the story to your kids of Yetzias Mitzrayim is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's the happening in the Haggadah. But no, the Maskan is no. Haven't you had the Haggadah without the Matzah and the Maror? Since Bavur Zeh, since the mitzvah of Matzah and Maror is on Tezvav, so wait till Tezvav to tell the story. Okay. So the question is, what's the Havmina? You know, Chazal, everything Chazal say is Emes. Chazal have a Havmina. Yachal, I might think. So even a Havmina, even something which Chazal reject, when you analyze the words of Chazal, when Chazal raised something, then they rejected. Even the Havmina, there are Rabbanim who spend hours and hours in Shir explaining what Chazal meant when they had their initial thought, which they ended up rejecting. It's a certain style of giving shir that some talk in the Brisker world, they have it a lot as well. So what was Chazal thinking? Why in the world should I tell Sibri Tzitzis Yisrael on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Strange. So Rav Aaron said as follows. The purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to receive the Torah on Har Sinai. That we know. The purpose of becoming free was becoming free, to freedom to serve Hashem, the Ruchnius freedom. There's the physical geula of Pesach leading up to the full spiritual geula of Shavuos of Matan Torah. What is the best proof, the best example, what best reflects this? The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Look in the Sefer Chinuch mitzvah Shin Vav. About a quarter of all this, the Sefer Chinuch writes, that's what Sfiras HaOmer is all about. It links Pesach to Shavuos. When you count from one thing to another, it shows they're connected. It shows they're connected. So the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer shows that Pesach is the beginning, leading up to Shavuos is the end. It's one big unit. There's a very, very striking Ramban in Parshas Emor. The Ramban writes that Sfiras HaOmer is like the Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuos. It's good. It's worthwhile to look that up. It's amazing. It's a very powerful language. That's what the Ramban writes. That the Sfiras HaOmer is like the Chol HaMoed from Pesach. It's like one big unit. Pesach leads up to Shavuos. The purpose of being free is not free to wander around, free to serve Hashem. And we don't know what to do until we got the Torah. So the purpose of Matan Torah was the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to receive the Torah on Har Sinai. Just one side point about this, one of my favorite words. There's a minhag to eat eggs at the Seder. It's an old, old custom. Why? There are lots of pshatim, many, many pshatim. So the Ishbitzer, the Sefer Meshiroch, gives the following pshat. All the Sfarim quote the Ishbitzer saying this. The egg is one of the only things that is basically born twice. First you lay the egg, then a little while later, it's hatched and out comes the chick, or whatever comes out. So that's Yetzias Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim, it's like you lay the egg. But when does the chick come out? When is the full birth? Shavuos, you get the Torah. That's a great shot that the Ishbitzer says. It's a double level geula. There's the beginning, the first level is Pesach, and then the full geula is Shavuos, we get the Torah. That's the Ishbitzer's shot, why we exit the Seder. That's a fabulous, fabulous upshot. So Rav Aaron said as follows, Yachol me Rosh Chodesh, I would think, tell the story on Rosh Chodesh. Why Rosh Chodesh? Rav Aaron said that Rosh Chodesh Nisan was the beginning of Matan Torah. Matan Torah began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Shmos Perek Yud Beis, that is when Hashem gave us the first mitzvos as a nation. Avram received mitzvos as a yachid, Yitzchak Yachid. When did we receive mitzvos as a nation for the first time? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan in Mitzrayim. Who basically says this? Who basically points out that the beginning of Matan Torah was on Rosh Chodesh Nisan in Mitzrayim? Who points it out? Who points it out? Rashi, the first Rashi in Chumash. Rashi asks, how come the Torah starts from Bereishis with all the stories? Why doesn't it start from HaChodesh Zerachem Shmos Perek Yud Beis? Why does Rashi choose Shmos Perek Yud Beis? Because that's what Matan Torah means, teaching the Jewish people what to do, the mitzvahs. Torah means Torah, teach us the halachas. What's mitzvah, what's aser. So it's Rashi. So Rav Aaron said that he made this point. This is a deep idea. Matan Torah began in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the most decadent, debased nation in the world. Don't ever think that the only place you can be very religious is in Eretz Yisrael. It's not true. the Torah was given not just in Chutz La'aretz, it was given in Mitzrayim, which at the time was the worst land. The Sfarim referred to Mitzrayim, it's a play on words from the Psukim, as Ervas Ha'aretz. The Sfarim referred to Mitzrayim as Ervas Ha'aretz. And the Torah is given in Ervas Ha'aretz, that's teaching us that the Torah applies everywhere, and you can and must be a religious Jew everywhere in the world. Okay, that's a side point. An important side point, but a side point nonetheless. So Ravon said as follows. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was Matan Torah. When did we begin to achieve that goal? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that's why there's a very good Havamina. Tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim at the first appropriate moment. The earliest appropriate time to tell the story is when you begin to achieve the goal. When did I get to the goal? Tati, when did I get to the goal? The goal was Matan Torah. So say Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's the Havamina. Since the goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was Matan Torah, and Matan Torah starts on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that's the Havamina Yachol Me Rosh Chodesh. I might think, tell to say Rosh Chodesh, that's the earliest possible time, the appropriate time. Kamashmala, no, it's better to wait till you have the matzah, have the visual aid, and then you wait for the Tesvav Nisan. The Ritva basically says this word that Rav Aaron said, he developed it beautifully, Yachol Me Rosh Chodesh. Okay. Number 13, Shasani Kirsona. Ravon would often talk about that. I heard him talk about that bracha, and he said the pshat is shasani kirtzono, and this is he used the word. He said that Hashem created women closer to the eschatological goals of mankind. That means Mashiach. That when Mashiach comes, mankind will achieve a certain level. And he gave a few examples of this. One example is fighting wars. By Mizman Mashiach, Lo Yisagoy Ogoy Cher, there won't be any more wars. And now, you know, women normally don't fight in battle. That's one. There are many other examples. So he said, the Pshara Shasani Kitsono is, this is what he said, that Hashem created women closer to the Ratzon Hashem has for mankind, closer, he used, to the eschatological goals, and that's the Pshat. This fits very well, by the way. There's a very, very important Medrash that the Sfarim quote. It's Yalkut Shimoni, I wrote it here, in Shmuel, Remez Ayin Ches, when Chana is davening, so it has the word Libech, with one, not Levavcha, but with one base. So the our version, our Girsa in the Medrash is, why one? Because Chazal say Levavcha, two bays, the double bays refers to the Eitz Tov and the Eitz Sahara. And this Medrash says that the one base is a reference that on one level, women are created closer with only a Yetzer Tov. Obviously, one Yetzer Hara too, but more of the emphasis on Yetzer Tov, not the Yetzer Hara. That's why it's the one base and not two. That's what it says in the Yalkut. That's our. There's another Girsa, which is the opposite. But the Girsa that we have in our Medrash says it that way. And this fits very well if you're aware of Hirsch in Vayikra, Perikov Gimel, says a similar idea. That's why women are putter from most mitzvot seishas van grama. For that reason, because women don't need it in the same way as men do. Okay, but that all fits into one yisod. That's a Ravon's pshat in Shasani Kitsona. Okay, there's a lot more things to say here. I'll just okay, very briefly. I'll do 15 and 16 briefly, and then we'll 17 will end. 15 is the Dalit Parshios. Ravon would often talk about the Dalit Parshios. What's the unifying theme of the Dalit Parshios? So Ravon said as follows: Parshas HaChodesh talks about getting ready for Pesach, the laws of Pesach. You're going to be free. You're going to be free. So you're going to be free. So Rav Aaron explained that the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu tells us that a person shouldn't take pride. Al Yishalel, don't take pride in what are the three things you shouldn't take pride in? Chachma, Gvura, and Osher. Wisdom, power, and wealth. That's what the famous Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, I think the Perek Test tells us. Why those three things? Why does Yirmiyahu say these three things don't take pride in? Because these three things, wealth, power, and wisdom, these three things are the three things that a person might take pride in, because that's what we use to accomplish and change the world. How do people get out there and affect the world? Through wealth, power, and wisdom. So the Pasuk is saying, don't take pride in these things, rather take pride in Avodas Hashem, or only take pride in service of Hashem. Okay. So Rav Aaron said, that Pasuk is the key to the Dalit Parshios. we're going to become, when you're a slave, you can't use your wealth, power, and wisdom. You can't do it. You can be wealthy and powerful and you have a lot of wisdom, but you're a slave. You're stuck under your master. When you become free, then you can use your wealth, power, and wisdom. So Pesach, every year we become free again. We are re-experiencing Chavos. Parsha Chodesh, Pesach time, we're re-experiencing Chavos. The other three Parshios help us get ready for the freedom of Pesach. Wealth, power, and wisdom. Parsha Shkalim talks about proper use of wealth. Haman used his wealth to bribe Achashverosh to try to kill the Jewish people. That's the bad use of wealth. And we use our money for a communal mitzvah. Give a half shekel for the Kabbanah Sibur. So Parsha Shkalim is teaching us the proper use of wealth as we're getting ready for the freedom of Pesach. Parsha Zachor is about power. Amalek used their power to try to wipe out innocent people. We use our power to wipe out rishus. Amalek is full of rishus. And the Torah says you have to wipe out rishus. So Parsha Zachor teaches us the proper use of power. Again, this is a beautiful idea. We're going to become free again on Pesach. We have to know how to use our freedom. What does it mean to be free? I can use my wealth, power, and wisdom. I have to use it the right way. And of course, Parshas Parah talks about wisdom. There's the right way to use wisdom and the wrong way to use wisdom. There's a lot to gain from general wisdom. But wisdom that's unfettered, general secular wisdom without any limits and any control, is very dangerous. A lot of nations have used quote-unquote wisdom to push their horrible things. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, had professors with PhDs writing articles explaining why their approach made sense. Stalin had a beautiful approach, you know, make everything fair and everything equal and divide up all the land. You have 5 million farmers you have to kill to divide up all the... Okay, so you got to do that too. So unfettered wisdom can be very dangerous. When is wisdom positive and useful? As we said before, when it's under the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I say to myself, I have human wisdom, but if human wisdom says X and Hashem says Y, I do what Hashem says. When does wisdom become something good and productive and positive? When a person says to himself, as smart as I am, Hashem is smarter, and if what I say X and Hashem says Y, I have to do Y. What teaches us that? That's Parshas Parah. Parah Aduma is the ultimate chok, the ultimate mitzvah which defies rational thinking. And therefore, in Parshas Parah, we're training ourselves. It's good to have wisdom. It's good to use our minds. We have to recognize, I do what Hashem says. Even if it's a chok, even if I don't understand it. And so therefore, Parshas Shkalim, Zachor, and Parah are helping us get ready for the freedom of Pesach, as Aaron said, building up to the freedom of Pesach. That's his angle on the Dalad of Parshas. This leads up to number 16, Tam. He said the following vort about Parshas Parah. It's a beautiful idea. The word Tam means reason, and the word Tam means flavor. It's interesting. The same word has two meanings. What's the Pshat? The Pshat as follows. It's very good to learn and study the reasons for mitzvahs. The Sefer Chinuch is full. It gives you the reasons for all the mitzvahs. Rav Hirsch gives you many reasons for many of the mitzvahs. The Rambam and part of Morning Book gives you reasons for many of the mitzvahs. And we encourage people to learn the reasons for mitzvahs. However, the reason for the mitzvah isn't the essence of the mitzvah. It's only the flavor. That's why ta means reason and ta means flavor. If I give a mashal, I change the mashal slightly. Mitzvahs are like vitamins. They're good for you. They're healthy. A doctor says, take this vitamin. We trust that we take the vitamin. Most of us don't take our blackberries to the doctor's office. He says, take this vitamin. We Google the vitamin, and oh, maybe yes, maybe no. But most of us don't do that. Most of us trust the doctor. He has all these degrees on the wall. That's why they put them there, because you're trusting the doctor. Trust the doctor. Take the vitamins. Okay, mitzvahs are like vitamins. Hashem is smarter than the doctors. Hashem gives us a mitzvah. It's good for us. It's good for us physically. It's good for us emotionally. It's good for us spiritually. Olam hazo, letov lach. Mitzvahs are good for us. Mitzvahs are good. Period. Mitzvahs are like vitamins. However, when you know the reason for the mitzvah, then the mitzvah talks to you more. You get more into the mitzvah, more of a geschmack. The reason for the mitzvah, this is a good mashal, It adds flavor to the mitzvah. Mitzvos are like vitamins. Mitzvos with reasons are like Flintstones vitamins. It's a very correct mushel. That's, Ravon didn't say, I'm not sure he knows what Flintstones vitamins are, but that's his mushel with the updated version. That's a beautiful pshat. Ta'a means reason, ta'a means flavor. The reason adds flavor to the mitzvah, but it's not the mitzvah itself. The mitzvah is going to be about the flavor. What if you don't take it? Marah doesn't taste good, but it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. So you eat the marah, it's a mitzvah. Okay. Ta'a means flavor. There's many more. I just want to close with the following idea. When I think of Avaron, I think of the Masorah. For me, he was a special link to the Masorah. When I heard Avaron give his Ashkafa Shirim, his Pasha Shirim, he would tell stories from Europe. He would quote the good Dolim. He'd bring it all together. And I felt I was experiencing the Masorah. There's a link here. There's a link. It goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's my link. And just somehow, the stories from Europe, the link, it was a very powerful experience for me to feel I'm part of the Masorah, hearing this person teach me Divrei Torah. And the second point is, and this I experienced in week in, week out for a year and a half, and I saw this with my own eyes, I saw this very old, weak, frail person come to life, literally come to life during the shiur. I mentioned before, to walk from the door to here would take him 5 minutes. That's an eternity for the rest of us. It takes us 10 seconds. And he was krechsing, and he had a heavy walker, and he was leaning over, and he was breathing heavily. This is how you come into a shiur. Then he'd start giving a shiur at 8:15. He'd go for 2 hours, and I saw him come to life. I saw this person just physically come to life during the shiur. I saw this with my own eyes. And we ended 10:15 for mine. He easily could have gone on another hour. You could see he could have gone on much longer. He came to life. What's the pshat? The pshat is when you're plugged into the Masorah and you're giving a shiur, you have the whole Masorah behind you. The whole Masorah comes to life when you give a shiur, when you're plugged into the Masorah. And then the body of the Masorah, all of the Rabbanim who preceded you, and their Torah and their way of life, it's all part of your shiur that you're giving, and you're plugged in, and it physically changes the person. And I saw this week in and week out. Very, very powerful experience to see that week in, week out for a year and a half. Ravon's older brother, the Rav Zatzal, people saw the same thing. He was an old man giving shiur as an old man. This is what he experienced. And there was one time, I played this tape last year, I want to play it again now, if you don't mind, where the Rav described himself giving shiur as an old man. And this idea that you're plugged into the Masorah, and the Masorah comes to life, and you feel there are other Rabbanim in the room with you as you're giving the shiur, and you feel the Rishonim, and then the strength you get, the Rav would come to a shiur old and weak, and then the shiur would end, and he'd be very strong, and the students are tired, and he's powerful and strong. This happened week in and week out. And to make it easier, so I had someone type up what the Rav's going to say now. If you have it in front of you, it's much easier. This tape is pretty clear. I used to play this tape in a poor quality. I found a better quality last year. And now with the better quality, if it's pretty quiet in here, if everyone has it in front of you, one for every two people, I think it takes around 9 minutes. If you have to leave, you can leave. This is the Rav as an old man when he's 71 years old, describing himself giving shiur as an old man. The Rav here is at a Pidyon HaBen. The Pidyon HaBen is of a baby who is the son of someone in the Rav shiur at the time. And this baby was the grandson of someone who was in the Rav shiur in the 1940s. You with me? So the Rav was in a very nostalgic Masorah mood at the time, and he gave this speech. This is one part of the speech. Does everyone have it in front of you? One for every two people, more or less? Because if you have it in front of you, you can really follow along. It's pretty clear. This is and what the Rav says here in these 9 minutes, I really felt myself when I was hearing Avraham give shiur. Okay, so we'll play it now. We'll do the best we can. Are we playing it now? Okay. Shh. It starts from okay.
As a matter of fact, I want to tell you, and please don't misinterpret my words. I'm not trying to brag or to boast. I mean, I'm very far from it. But whatever I said now is not just an idea. To me, it's an experience. Let me say that the secret of Nisparadeles, of combining, uniting, merging, many generations in the one community, that the strategy of kids disappeared. The years play no role, centuries have no significance. What generations, I mean, can, so to say, communicate each other. I do experience every time I enter the classroom at each year. And I've been a teacher for the last, how many years? Oh, you make it very old. Whenever I enter the classroom, which is crowded with boys, could be as far as 8 is concerned, my grandchildren. I enter the classroom as an old man, a mob, with a wrinkled face and eyes reflecting fatigue and the sadness of old age. Yes, we all know that spirit, that sadness. It's a very strange sadness. It's the melancholy of things, of memory, of remembering things. Things will disappear, don't exist. Then I enter a classroom, I sit down, and opposite me, rows of boys, young boys, with beaming eyes, beaming faces, clear eyes, radiating the joy of being young. And always when I enter, you know, I enter in a very pessimistic mood. I always enter the class in despair. And I ask myself, I mean, every time I enter the classroom, can there be a dialogue between an old teacher and young students? Between a rabbi in his Indian summer and boys enjoying the spring of their lives? I stand here. I don't know what the conclusion is. Whenever I stand here, the door opens, another old man walks in and sits down. He is older than I am. Oh, the Talmud told me the rabbi, he's older than the rabbi. Right? He is the grandfather of the rabbi. His name is Reb Chaim Brisker. Without whom, no shir can be built up nowadays. Then the door opens quietly again, and another old man comes in. He's older than Reb Chaim. He lived in the 17th century. What's his name? Shabtai Cohen. He's the famous Shach. Who must be present when the phenomenes are being discussed when we study about Mitzvah or Baba Tami. But, and then more visitors show up. Some of the visitors lived in the 11th century, some in the 12th century, some in the 13th century. Some lived in antiquity. Rabbi Akiva, Rashi, Rabbi Natan, the Ravot, the Rashbot. More and more that people coming. Of course, what do I do? I introduce them to my pupils and the dialogue commences. The Rambam says something, the Rambam disagrees. Sometimes it's very nasty. Very sharp. How strong it is against the Rambam. A boy jumps up to defend the Rambam against the Rambam. And the boy is fresh, young boys are fresh. So he wanted to use his improper, he used his improper language, so I correct him. And another boy jumps up with a new idea. The Rajbos smiles gently. I try to analyze what the young boy meant. Another boy intervenes. We call upon the Rabbi Natan to express his opinion, and suddenly a symposium of generations comes into existence. Generations! Young boys, 22, 23, 24 years of age, now boys who are just 18 years old and in my class, one generation, then my generation, then the generation of Abraham Lisbon, then the generation of the Shah, then the generation of the Hasbro, the Rambam, the generation of the Rambam, the generation of Rashi, the generation of the Rabbi Natan, and then I mean there's no end. What about Rabbi Haibel? What about Rabbi Tigger? Rabbi Lezer? Rabbi Zaka? All generations are out. We all speak one language. But Tikkun Oretz, Sofer Achas, Sudvorim Acharim. We all chat, we all laugh, we all enjoy the company, and we all pursue one goal. We all are committed to a common vision, and we all operate in the same categories. There is Masera collegiality, friendship, comradeship between old and young, between antiquity, middle ages, and modern times. The what is this unity of generations, this march of centuries, this conversation of generations, this dialogue between antiquity and present, will finally bring the redemption of the Jew. Let me tell you that at the conclusion of 3 years, sometimes 4 hours, I will witness. I emerge young, emulated, younger than my peers. We are tired, exhausted, some of them young. I feel happy. I have defeated age. I have defeated oldness. I emerged young, less fatigued and less exhausted than my young pupils. We belong to the same Masora community where generations meet. Their hands, no matter how wrinkled and parchment dry in one hand is, and how soft and warm the other hand is, shake, unite. And in a community where the great dialogue continues, when I was looking at the baby, was redeemed this evening. I don't know whether he'll be in my class, but I wish to have him. But someone who knew sit and teach the baby. And the baby is already a member of the community, of the greatness of our community. And I feel as if I it's possible to establish communication with this baby.
So that's how I felt when I heard Rav Aaron give shiur. You feel the Masorah in the room. It's the most powerful experience that one can have. So, just to conclude, I hope that tonight I tried to get across the idea. Rav Aaron was, number one, a link in the Masorah for so many people, and like brought it to life, and put the stories, and the halachas, and the way he would quote things, and so many ideas from Israel we can learn from. Just again, just to emphasize the simcha in adversity. There was kimat no one like him. The simcha in adversity. You're facing challenges in life, and it's difficult. You want to look for someone. If he can do it, and I can do something maybe similar as well. That's what Abraham taught us. The little things, treating everyone with respect. Some tremendous ideas. The time, the flavor, and the reason. And with that, we'll stop here. I want to thank TAC and T-Cubed again. It was very, very good for everything that organizing this year. And just again, I'm sorry if it went a little late, but if you're interested, the things that are here are available. If you're interested for some other chizuk and inspiration, okay, we'll stop here.